Greetings, Meltopians. Are you looking to delve deeper into the world of Meltopia? Then check out our Patreon, where you can find written mythos pieces, world maps, found footage, art, Patreon-exclusive shows, and more. Just go to patreon.com/Meltopia and join one of our tiers for access to great new content. Brave the forbidden and embrace the darkness.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Thank you.
Wesley awoke to the din of dripping water and the echoes of scuttling creatures. After Salvatore's close call, the troop stayed up until Riva volunteered to monitor the camp the rest of the night. He remembered it being hard to sleep, not knowing whether it was day or night or how many hours had passed since they entered the cave. But his circadian rhythm managed to pull through, and he eventually found slumber. When he opened his tent, he found Vorin and Riva packing up some of the equipment and dashing the remains of the last night's campfire. Moffat and Salvatore must have still been in their tents. Wesley felt terrible for laughing at Sal. It was one of those moments when you knew you weren't supposed to laugh, but the impulse to do so somehow overcame every lesson of etiquette you had ever learned. The truth was, he was afraid for Sal. Last night's events demonstrated how vulnerable he was. The man's rifle hadn't done anything to the thing except maybe irritate it. So, it was incumbent upon Wesley and the rest of the group to take special care of Salvatore and ensure he survived.
Ah, how touching. You want to protect the dead weight that's been holding you all down. You know it's only a matter of time before he gets killed, right? Or have you deluded yourself so much as to think he'll make it home to that sister of his? You should have let that beast take him last night and gotten it over with. What does your kind say? Just rip the band-aid off?
Is there possibly any part of you that isn't a piece of shit? Sal hasn't done anything to raise your ire. Why wish for his death? Why laugh at his misfortune? Whatever world or, I don't know, universe you come from must have been the worst group of assholes the cosmos has ever seen.
Aw, did I hurt your sensibilities by telling you the truth? To be honest, out of the lot of you, I find Sal the least detestable. But I'm a creature bound by the realities of this little thing we call existence. And I know a dead man walking when I see one. He'll keep getting into binds, and you and those fools you travel with will keep trying to keep him alive. Wesley, Salvatore is like a baby seal in shark-infested waters. He's bound to get eaten no matter how much you shoo away the sharks.
You don't let someone die because they're defenseless. That's not what being human is.
And that is why your apish little race is doomed to perish. You let those faulty little hearts of yours guide you instead of your brains. The weak are fodder. They are meant to live a life on their knees or lie dead in the dirt. That is their function. That is their fate.
Wesley ignored the voice and walked over to Salvatore's tent, where he could see the shadow of the man busy packing up his things inside. Hey, Sal, can I come in for a second? Sure, come on in. Wesley unzipped the front of the tent and entered. Salvatore had his things all bundled up and was reloading a cartridge for his rifle. A lot of good this'll do me, right? There was a sadness in his voice, a bleak resolve that Wesley had difficulty hearing. He knew what he was thinking, exactly what the voice had said. But Wesley would be damned if that goddamn thing in his head was right.
I just wanted to apologize for laughing last night. It was wrong. What happened was horrible. I don't know what came over me. I guess I was just nervous as all.
Salvatore shrugged it off.
It's all right. My cousin once went flying through a window, and his whole wrist was cut up, bleeding all over the fucking place. Then, for some reason, all I could do was laugh. I mean, I couldn't stop. Couldn't tell you why to this day.
Wesley noticed Sal avoided eye contact as if looking at him might loose something he was trying to keep contained.
You know, you're gonna make it back, Sal. We'll make sure you get back to your sister.
Salvatore looked down, and Wesley could almost see the mountain of guilt resting upon his shoulders.
I never should have left, you know. I just wanted to help my sister and Anne out, help them get back to some kind of normalcy, and be able to make ends meet. We were both the most important things in each other's lives, and I should have listened to her. I should have just stayed put. I'm I'm no soldier. I'm just a foul-mouthed guy with dreams of becoming something more than a grease monkey. Or a grunt, as the case may be. You've shown more bravery than anyone I've ever seen, Sal. You don't have any powers, yet you fight these things with everything you've got. You don't give up and you don't give in. That's more than I can say about me or most people. While you came here to help your family, a noble cause, I came to give up on life. Sal, I'm not half the man you are. Remember that. You'll make it through this, I promise.
Salvatore just nodded, an obligatory grin crossing his face to make Wesley believe he'd made an impact.
Thanks, Weiss. I appreciate that.
Wesley just nodded and let the man alone. Exiting the tent, he was surprised to see Riva waiting outside, Vorin close by. The three moved a few yards off, their voices low.
Riva wants to know if everything is all right with Sale.
I'll be honest, this last debacle has him shaken. He doesn't think he'll make it through all this.
Wesley watched Riva's face bunch up as if he were mad that Sal would think such a thing. In fact, he was so upset that he barged into Salvatore's tent uninvited.
What's that all about?
Riva's a man who was hard to impress, but back there in Misereth, when Sal was willing to put his all-too-human life on the line for the likes of me, you, and Marfit, he gained great respect for the man. I suppose you might say Rivers found a little mentee in our Salvatore and refuses to let the man put himself down.
Didn't know River was so sentimental. He just, you know, always seems so stoic.
His station often requires him to be, but there's a lot you don't know about him. Hell, there's a lot I don't know about him, and we've been partners for years. He holds things close to the chest. The Mousers don't live the cheeriest of lives. In fact, I think we're the closest Rivers ever had to family.
Foreign statements made Wesley feel even worse for the Mousere, whose cursed life couldn't have been easy. Though, not purposely, Wesley often considered Riva a weapon, something they used when events got out of hand. It was a shitty perspective, and he would make more of a concerted effort to talk to the man and get to know him. A few minutes later, Riva exited the tent with Sal, who seemed more upbeat. Wesley was glad to see it. Knowing that Salvatore had some hope left in him lifted his own spirits. A sort of symbiotic empathy. When Moffat finally came out with his backpack and lantern, he quickly disassembled his tent. Wesley was surprised by the fluidity with which he did it. He imagined Moffat at tea parties and lofty get-togethers with aristocrats and politicians. But the speed and acumen with which he handled himself spoke to something different, a man experienced in the field. Indeed, he worked hard to cover it up, his snobbery leading one to believe he would never stoop so low as to perform manual labor. But beneath the man's haughty veneer was something else. Wesley just wasn't sure what exactly that was. When the camp was finally packed up, the group continued through the caves. Wesley noticed Sal was up front with Riva, the two vigorously signing to one another. Moffat and Vorin were careful to light up the walls and ceiling, which, like before, only alighted upon the ghost of a presence. The chittering of the centipede monstrosities echoed throughout the cavern, following them but never encroaching. More of those iridescent flowers came into view, hanging from the ceiling and walls, their petals subtly moving for the behemoth carnivorous things wriggling within. They were careful to keep their distance from them. As the party went on, Wesley began to notice the architecture hewn into the cave walls become more widespread. There were now temple-like structures coming up from the rocky sediment, monolithic pillars that rose from the various chasms and jutted into the ceiling, strange ornate writing etched into their basaltic skin. It seemed like they were reaching the edge of a city of some sort, not just the rough-hewn structures of some primitive race. Still, there was no sign of life except the clamoring of thousands of legs clicking on the ceiling and walls, always just a bit faster than the group's flashlights could capture. Worryingly, the sounds were becoming more numerous and frequent, and, at one point, the chitinous clatter of large insectoids was all around them.
Oh, fuck! Here we go again!
Keep your guard up. I can't be sure, but they seem to be coordinating.
Strange behavior for centipedes, if that's even what they are. They're usually solitary hunters, not group feeders. Well, as someone who's been up close and personal with the things, they don't seem like your average house centipede. You know what I'm saying?
More emerged from the cracks and fissures of the cave walls and ceiling, crowding the place in a flood of legs, pincers, and thrashing teeth. Riva removed his mask, his mouth dripping a viscous, foul liquid that burned through the stone floor. The Malsayer kept Sal behind him, protecting him from any fallout from his forthcoming maledictions. Yet, just as he opened his mouth to spew Hal's words, something strange happened. From the hollows decorating the cave's rocky surface, giant, fleshy appendages jutted out. They were of varying size and shape, but all lethal in nature. Some were huge, multi-digited hands that grabbed handfuls of the arthropodic things and crushed them, their insides spilling loudly upon the rock slabs below. Others were spike-like in appearance, skewering the giant insects, impaling them, or severing their chitinous bodies in half. Still others formed blunt hammer-like limbs that pounded the things into oblivion, staining the craggy walls with the creature's innards and shattered exoskeletons. While the group watched in awe, for a second time, Wesley noticed something strange about the killing appendages. They were translucent. He could see bioluminescent organelles pumping inside. The things seemed capable of hardening their exterior, despite their flesh seeming paper-thin. As the onslaught continued, the arthropodal menaces began to retreat back into the black recesses of their stone homes, the clicking of their legs fading into the distance until they were only the faintest of echoes.
Oh, Jesus. Not gonna complain, but, what the fuck was that?
Suddenly, as if the hollows of the cave had become mouths, a voice sounded from all around.
I imagine you are a bit confused, Outworlders. But rest assured, we mean you no harm. That is not to say we are harmless, as you can see. Usually, the vermin know not to come this far, but it seems you are too delectable a meal to pass up. So come, and we shall have words. It's been a long time since we've been able to have a conversation.
Well, I've no idea what was just said. So, as our resident translator, would you mind interpreting Dr. Morrigan? The thing, or things, said they have no intention of hurting us and that we should talk. Also, they called us Outworlders, so they know we're not from Gremlin somehow. Yeah, well, those diseased fucks wanted to talk too, and look where that got us. Based on what we just saw, I don't think we have much of a choice, Sal.
Wesley's right. We're a bit caught between a rock and a hard place. No pun intended.
They all looked at each other in agreement and moved forward into the caves. This time, the chatter of arthropodal horrors was absent, the echo of dripping water and the whisper of a chilly breeze their only company. As they went, they noticed the terrain change. Strange, translucent umbilicae lined the walls and ceiling like a network of electrical wires at a power station. Wesley saw glowing viscera inside them, which occasionally pulsated with electric light. He presumed it was some form of bioelectric conduction, not dissimilar from gap junctions in glial cells, except on a more macroscopic level. He could hear the sound of massive things slithering through the crags and fissures of the walls, the song of eldritch things echoing throughout hollow spaces. Mammoth cylindrical things that tapered at the top, like giant fleshy teepees, punctuated the expanse of rock and stalagmites. They seem made from the same gelatinous substance as the tendrils running across the cave walls and ceiling. They, too, contained bizarre organs that seemed to float in some alien viscous fluid. Finally, something behemoth shifting assaulted their ears, causing pebbles to rain down from the ceiling, a melody of stone against rock resounding throughout the empty subterranean space.
Oh, Jesus! What the fuck is this place? It's like I feel like I'm in an Aliens movie with all this H.R. Geiger-looking shit.
Just stay calm. Panicking will get us nowhere. Moffat, if there's anything you're holding back, now would be a good time to bring us up to date.
I'm afraid I'm as in the dark as you are, Mindy friend.
The place was a city of sorts, bizarre fleshy structures punctuating the rocky landscape, membranous tunnels connecting some of the alien things. Tubers ran from one building to the next, as if the whole thing were part of some complex neural network. Wesley couldn't help but think of mycelium and other complex fruiting bodies. But these things weren't fungal in origin, not as far as he could tell. The things resembled the translucent creatures inhabiting the ocean's trenches, where many animals are transparent, presumably for camouflage. Yet he had never seen a land creature display such qualities. The biologist in him was intrigued, but the human in him was petrified. Once they reached a denser part of the city, where cyclopean structures jutted into the dark above, and those strange conical things were in large number, the voice came again.
That'll be far enough. How like you are abode. I'm sure it's quite alien to you, perhaps even terrifying, but it is our only reminder of home. Like you, we are not from around here. So we've had to make do with the accommodations these accursed lands have afforded us. That being said, we are far from helpless. But you seem to have caused quite a stir in the surface world. The acolytes of the Prince of Snakes chasing you, the Erethum's children snapping at your heels. We wonder what the infatuation is.
Wesley, the only one who could understand the ominous voice, replied,
I honestly don't know. We only recently discovered that the Prince of Snakes or his servants were chasing us.
Poor little ignorant creatures, traipsing along without thought, without knowledge of consequence. Normally we would subsume and dissolve your frail shells into our great mass, but we believe diplomacy may be the best way forward, given our potential mutual interests.
Wesley, understanding the subtle threat, spoke sternly.
And what mutual interests might that be?
That, my little friend, is something we should speak about.
The cave suddenly shook like a massive worm was turning beneath the earth. The stone whined as if screaming from its strain to accommodate whatever burdened its rocky mass. The sound of something wet could be heard all around them, as if whatever it was moving occupied the entirety of the cavern, slithering out from every hollow the grotto had to offer. Finally, something awful began to pour itself from the massive hole in the stalactite-ridden ceiling. It partook of nothing Wesley had ever seen. It was giant and amorphous, a thing of writhing translucent skin, bioluminescent organs floating in a milieu of foreign substances. Glowing vasculature crisscrossed the thing as if it were a living map, all pulsating in a single harmonic rhythm. Tendrils of titanic scope cushioned its approach to the rocky floor, crawling outward like the sprawl of a beach squid. It began to cohere, forming limbs resembling arms, tentacles, and legs, both human and inhuman. Its top became crowned with what looked like multiple heads, hundreds of eyes rising into existence, focusing on the embattled truth. Something like mouths appeared across its collective faces, spreading into wide, sinister grins. As the thing cast its mammoth shadow across Wesley and his peers, it finished its sentence.
Face to face.
Grimland is a Maltopia production. Today's episode was written by Stephen Anzalone. The episode was edited by Walker Kornfeld. Sound production and editing was performed by Stephen Anzalone. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching Maltopia. That's M-A-E-L-T-O-P-I-A. And if you'd like to know more about Grimland and contribute to its nightmarish expansion, visit us at www.patreon.com/Maltopia, where you can gain access to all sorts of art, mythologies, stories, and more. For more information about Grimland and the world of Maltopia, visit us at maltopia.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.